Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Coming up, AIDS Walk Ohio is happening later this month in downtown Columbus. And while an HIV diagnosis is not the death sentence it used to be, funds for prevention and treatment of the disease are still just as important. We'll find out more about the event and what the money raised does. A first of its kind in Ohio recovery center is opening in the capital city to serve pregnant women and moms with substance use disorder. We'll find out where it will be and more about all of the unique features this facility will offer. And 2024 has been dubbed the Summer of Soccer in Columbus. I'll have more on that with the Columbus Sports Commission. Plus, Clay Gordon is in for Doug Petcash of Face the State to take a look at state politics. First up on Columbus Perspective, since its start in 1991, the Robert J. Foss Memorial AIDS Walk Ohio has raised more than $2 million for HIV/AIDS treatment and prevention programs in the Buckeye State. It's returning this April 20th at Genoa Park in downtown Columbus. And we're joined today by Equitas Health's Director of Events, Rob Duvall. Hi, Rob. Thanks for joining us on Columbus Perspective.
Hi, Kate. Thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure. So Equitas Health is in charge of the annual AIDS Walk. Tell me a little more about the history of this event.
Well, you know, back in 1990, in the beginning, truly, AIDS Walk was founded at a very grassroots level by volunteers and individuals affected by HIV and AIDS.
It was definitely a need back then, and that need has kind of evolved and changed over the years. And now we're talking more about prevention of HIV and AIDS, or really functional ways to live with the disease, right?
It's amazing when we think back 40 years ago that, you know, if you were diagnosed with HIV, it was a terminal illness and you were going to die of AIDS. With all the funding, because of groups like AIDS Walk Ohio and all of our sponsors and donors, we're truly at a different level and a different time when we talk about HIV and AIDS today. You can live a long, happy, viral-free life with HIV now. The importance for us is really talking about prevention and stigma, and really looking to see where we see the largest transmission of HIV and AIDS these days, and how do we prevent it and educate the community about their options.
Speaking of which, can you give me kind of an outline, a little bit of information about where those rates of HIV infection are higher and if there's any surprises in that data?
Well, I think there are no surprises, right? At the end of the day, when we look at access to healthcare, access to medication, access to prevention, it's not surprising that it's in, you know, our BIPOC community, our trans community, LGBTQIA plus members that are more marginalized when it comes to finding a healthcare home and healthcare opportunities. So it's not surprising, sadly.
And so with events like AIDS Walk, Equitas Health is raising the very important funding that is needed to run these prevention programs, to provide treatment to what Rob mentioned, marginalized groups who may not have the access to health care that everyone else does or that other people do. So let's talk about AIDS Walk on April 20th. That's, of course, a Saturday. It's a walk and run, correct?
Correct. We do a 5K timed run and or you could take your time and stroll like I like to do with the 5K. And for our less ambitious supporters, we even have a 1 mile fun walk and talk. So there are lots of ways to be involved. Ooh. And one of my favorite things, Kate, is we have a virtual component. So when you register to walk, if you are going to be on vacation or you're at your sister's wedding or you're just not in town and can't participate, you can participate virtually through an app, which is fantastic.
That is fantastic. So basically, it's a real-time experience, just not on site in Columbus?
Exactly. You follow along right in the app. What I love about the app is if you're not in Columbus and you're going to participate virtually, grab a group of friends, grab your family members, go to brunch. You can wait in line and participate in AIDS Walk in Toledo if you'd like, while you're waiting for a table. So,
no one's going to be judging what kind of physical activity you're doing.
yeah, we're a judgment-free zone over here. So your participation is what we are ecstatic, to acquire, and we're just grateful for everybody who chooses to participate, raise the much-needed funds that come right back here to Equitas Health in our prevention programs and our treatment programs. It's remarkable.
Okay, is registration for the walk and run still open? Can I still get involved?
You can still get involved. You can register by going to AIDSWalkOhio.org. You right there, it's all the opportunities. You can be a virtual walker, you can sign up to be a day of walker. And even the morning of April 20th, you can show up at 9 o'clock in the morning and you can register morning of.
Okay, good to know. Tell me about the day of the event. What time is everything kicking off, and will there be any special activities or guests?
All of the above. Registration will kick off about 9 a.m. on Saturday morning. And when you come, you'll get your t-shirt, you'll get your incentives. If you raised $1,000, you're considered a grand walker. And you'll wind up with shoestrings, a ball cap, and a beautiful tumbler that's engraved. It's fantastic. So you get all those prizes if you raise up to that much. We'll kick the event off with our dear friend Jujubee from RuPaul's Drag Race. She will be our MC this year with and perform. We have the Black Pearls are going to perform, a community dance troupe, tons of speakers and guests. It really is a beautiful community morning of celebration and joy. We encourage everybody to come. The walk will step off at 10:30. From that point on, when everybody returns, we're usually done and out of the park by noon on Saturday morning. So you've had a great morning. You've done a great deed. You're helping people across the state learn more, educate, and find out about HIV and AIDS and where we are today.
Excellent. Give me that website again for people to get involved. And also, I wanted to ask, are there any volunteer opportunities available?
There are tons of volunteer opportunities, and you can find all that information at AIDSWalkOhio.org.
AIDS Walk Ohio 2024, happening Saturday, April 20th, downtown Columbus at Genoa Park. Sounds like it's going to be, as Rob said, a really kind of joyful, great event. And you said even if someone's not involved in the walk or not a volunteer for the event, they are welcome to come by and join in the fun, right?
Oh, it's a great date morning. Grab a friend, grab a loved one, grab someone you're smitten with, and come down to Genoa Park and enjoy this beautiful celebration of, I think, honestly, the accomplishments that have been achieved over the past 40 years when we talk about HIV and AIDS education and information.
It really is a remarkable history when you reflect upon it, and we're certainly summarizing in today's conversation, but so much has happened in the field of research and in treatment and prevention of HIV/AIDS. And as Rob mentioned earlier, 40, even 30 years ago, HIV was a death sentence. And it wasn't just the gay community. It wasn't just specific people in subsets. It's possible still for anyone to contract HIV. And with resources like Equitas Health in the community, there are ways to treat it and to live with it or to prevent it. So join all of the fun at AIDS Walk 2024 on Saturday, April 20th. Rob Duvall from Equitas Health, is there anything we forgot before we wrap up today?
I think one of the things I'd like to share with the listeners this morning is all the funds raised go right back into Equitas Health programs and services throughout Ohio. We have five medical centers where we provide all kinds of treatments and services. We're in Columbus, Dayton, Cincinnati, and our newest facility in Akron. We have a total of 14 offices throughout the state where we provide programs and services. From housing, HIV care, transportation, food pantries. Our medical centers provide primary care, specialized HIV care. We have full service pharmacies in those five areas, dental, gender affirming care, SIV and STI treatment and testing, mental health and recovery services. So, truly, when we look at the whole person, Equitas Health is a beautiful healthcare home for those who maybe haven't had a healthcare home in the past.
That is such an important point to make, because we're only now beginning to understand in the LGBTQIA plus community how many people have not gotten health care that they've needed because of barriers in the healthcare system that we perhaps never knew existed or weren't aware of. Another thing I wanted to ask, Rob, if I'm not mistaken, the Equitas pharmacies that are in different communities, those are also open to the public, right? Anyone can use those.
Thank you for mentioning that. That's absolutely true. You can go to an Equitas Health pharmacy. You don't have to be a patient or a client of Equitas Health. What is fantastic about these pharmacies, Kate, is 100% of the proceeds come back and fund programs and services at Equitas Health. So if you go to some of the larger pharmacies, you know, nationwide brands that we know so well, they pay shareholders at the end of the day. Equitas Health pharmacies come right back in as a social entrepreneurship into Equitas Health to pay for much needed programs and services.
It's a really great system here in the Columbus area. I know the King Lincoln neighborhood has an Equitas pharmacy, and there's a few others, right?
There's one in the Short North, one at King Lincoln, and then we have them in Akron, Dayton, and Cincinnati as well.
EquitasHealth.com, and that's spelled EQUITAS, health.com. is the website for this wonderful organization. And of course, they have information there as well about AIDS Walk 2024 coming up on Saturday, April 20th. There's a lot going on here in Columbus. That's just one of the great things this spring, and it's definitely worth checking out. Rob, thanks so much for joining us here today on Columbus Perspective.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you so much for helping us spread the word.
This is Jim at a party.
Dude, pass it. Hi there.
This is Jim making nachos.
Hi there.
This is Jim watching his favorite horror movie.
Oh yeah, definitely hi there.
And this is Jim driving his car.
Dude, not hi there.
Jim's making good decisions and not getting behind the wheel when he's high, because he knows that if you feel different, you drive different. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
I'm a wife and the mother of two kids, and I've got a good job.
Bye, Mom.
See you, Mom.
A pretty important job. Because of my family and my job, I really care about this neighborhood. It's a good neighborhood. Yes, there's some crime. And when I drive to work, like now, I realize that some people here don't trust the police. So the police should be reaching out to this community, and this community should reach out to the police. That's the way to make this a safer place. And when I get to work in the precinct house and put on my uniform, I can tell you as a police officer that this department is reaching out to the community, and the community is doing its part. We're building partnerships. This should be happening everywhere. This is how we can all be safer. Get involved. Start the conversation.
Start the conversation and help stop crime. To learn the five things you can do, go to ncpc.org/preventviolentcrime. A message from the National Crime Prevention Council and the Bureau of Justice Assistance.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Volunteers of America, Ohio, and Indiana is preparing for Ohio's very first Fresh Start Recovery Center, a first-of-its-kind residential treatment program for pregnant women and mothers with substance use disorders. Here to tell us more is Vice President of Behavioral Health Operations for Ohio, Jennifer Martinez. Welcome to Columbus Perspective, Jennifer.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate.
Well, I'm really excited to dig right into this. Let's start with the basics. What is the Fresh Start Recovery Center?
So it is a residential treatment facility located in downtown Columbus, where mothers and expecting women who have a substance use disorder can come into treatment with us, and they can also bring their kids into the treatment milieu with them.
That sounds like a wonderfully inclusive process that is probably has a great success rate. This is the first program of its kind, though, not just in Columbus, but in the entire state of Ohio. That's very, very unique, isn't it?
It is very unique. And we're very fortunate to be able to bring this program here to Central Ohio. We have four facilities in Indiana currently that are very similar. So while this is a new venture for us here in Ohio, this is an area that we have a lot of experience in as an affiliate.
Absolutely. So how exactly does the program work? What kind of services are offered for people that are participating? And how long does the treatment program generally take?
So the treatment program itself is three phases. The phase where the people are actually living with us lasts between 90 and 120 days, just depending on individual need. And then once a family graduates from the program, we will actually follow them 2 years post-program completion in the community to ensure that everyone is doing well, things are continuing to progress the way we would like to see them. The services are very comprehensive. So this is residential treatment, which means that we have family bedrooms and bathrooms, laundry facilities, a very nice kitchen dining area, et cetera, and childcare area, mother's rooms for nursing moms or moms who need to have some bonding time with their new infant. And we will be doing individual and group therapy, medication-assisted treatment. We'll be collaborating with someone to provide OBGYN care and collaborating with another entity to offer services for the children, whether that be behavioral health services, vaccines, just whatever the kids may need that are staying with us in that mix. So we really are being very planful and mindful about the way we're developing these services and what we're offering.
Jennifer Martinez is the Vice President of Behavioral Health Operations of Ohio for Volunteers of America, Ohio and Indiana. They are opening Ohio's very first Fresh Start Recovery Center for pregnant women and mothers with substance use disorders. Jennifer, tell me a little bit more about this new building in Columbus. What are those amenities that you've included? You've mentioned a couple, but what are some other ways that the building is family friendly for this process?
So we are developing a fantastic childcare area, you know, everything a family could need while they're staying with us. We're designing the building in a very trauma-informed way, with a focus on being inclusive to represent the population that we have here in Franklin County. Everything is going to be very light and bright. We've got a wonderful childcare area, a very large community kitchen that, you know, families can access and use. We have mother's rooms for nursing or for bonding with children. So just trying to be very inclusive and very thoughtful in the process as far as how we're designing and building this out.
Now, who would be eligible? Obviously, mothers and pregnant women with substance use disorders, but is this a referral-based program or can anyone walk in and begin receiving services?
So we are trying to make this as low barrier as possible in terms of admission. So we anticipate that we will get a lot of referrals from community partners, but we will also make the service available to anyone that just wants to walk in for an assessment to see if they're appropriate for admission into the program.
That is really remarkable because I know you hear a lot that sometimes, like you said, there are barriers to intake for people simply because they don't know where to start the process. Where exactly is this building going to be located in Columbus and when will it be open?
So we are going to be located at the corner of 5th and State Streets right downtown. We're just a couple of blocks off of East Broad Street, so very accessible. Lots of services nearby, lots of things that will be beneficial for moms and for families. And we are looking at being open in the last quarter of this year, so probably the late fall of 2024.
Volunteers of America, Ohio and Indiana is getting ready to open at the end of this year. Ohio's very first Fresh Start Recovery Center, first of its kind in the state and, of course, in Columbus, a residential treatment program for pregnant women and mothers with substance use disorders. Jennifer Martinez is the Vice President of Behavioral Health Operations of Ohio for Volunteers of America, Ohio and Indiana. Jennifer, tell me a little bit about the prevalence of substance use disorder and addiction in our community and what exactly the impact could potentially be for positive outcomes with this program.
So people who have kind of lived and worked in this space for a while, we know that substance use disorder has become a significant problem in this community. You really can't look at any population or any family and see a group that hasn't been impacted negatively by this. And what we're seeing is not only does Central Ohio have very high rates of substance use and accidental overdoses, we also have very high rates of children, babies that are born with neonatal abstinence syndrome. And also we have a very large number of children that don't make it to their first birthday in this community. And part of that is related to substance use disorder. So our goal is really to intervene with mom early in her pregnancy, allow her to get into treatment with us so that the baby is born with no substances in its system. We can avoid children's services getting involved, hopefully at that point, and really work on keeping families together and improving those birth outcomes, particularly for some of our minority populations in Central Ohio.
Absolutely. A wonderful goal to have, of course, especially when we're talking about those little ones. As someone who I myself have a Volunteers of America thrift store in my neighborhood that I regularly Yes. drop things off at, I just wanted to find out a little bit more about how people in the community who are listening may be able to support the Volunteers of America and what you're doing. Is that primarily through the thrift stores?
So we actually have a number of different contracts and services that we offer. So we will be billing Medicaid for the services in the Fresh Start Recovery Center, but we also serve veterans. We do a lot of work with homeless families, especially in Central Ohio. The thrift stores do help supplement the mission. They are very instrumental in giving us unrestricted funds that we can use for things that might not be covered under more traditional payer resources. So, you know, you can always donate to the organization directly. You can support us by shopping and donating at our thrift stores. And we're also going to be doing some donation events as we get closer to the opening of Fresh Start. Anyone who's had children knows that tiny humans require a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we're always looking for opportunities to have donations as far as tangible supplies that, you know, infants and babies might use and that sort of thing.
Wow. Looking forward to those opportunities. We'll keep an ear out for that. And of course, for the big grand opening of the very mm-hmm. first Fresh Start Recovery Center in Ohio, right here in Columbus later this year. Jennifer Martinez with the Volunteers of America, Ohio and Indiana. Anyone who might be listening right now that wants to know more, where should they go to get that information?
They can go to our website, which is voahohin.org.
voahohin.org. You're doing wonderful things in the community. The Fresh Start Recovery Center, just one great example. Is there anything we didn't get to, Jennifer, that you wanted to make sure we talked about today?
No, I think that's about it.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your time and best of luck. We look forward to the center opening later this year.
Thank you so much for having me.
Parenting is hard. Technology can make it harder. The Family Media Plan developed by the American Academy of Pediatrics helps make it easier. Go to healthychildren.org/media plan to create the media plan that's right for your family. Whether you make a full plan or just choose a few parts that matter the most to your family, healthychildren.org/media plan is an easy-to-use tool that will help your family set media priorities and create healthy digital habits in line with your family's values. You'll also get practical tips to help make the plan work. And you can come back to revise your plan as often as you need to, like at the beginning of each school year or during summer and holiday breaks. Raising kids in the age of screens is easier when you have a plan. Go to healthychildren.org/media plan and make your plan today.
Every 40 seconds, a child is reported missing. That's 2,000 children every single day. It's a heart-wrenching reality that we can no longer ignore. Find the Children is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping find missing kids. You can be a part of their mission by donating your unwanted vehicle, running or not. Call 1-800-294-4255. 0222. We guarantee that you will receive the maximum tax deduction. We provide fast, free pickup with 24-hour response. Call 1-800-294-0222. Find the Children provides crucial resources to help find missing children and educational materials to teach kids how to recognize and avoid predators. Our recovery programs have a proven track record of reuniting kids with their families. It's time to act. Donate your unwanted or unused car. Help us build a world where every child is safe. Pick up the phone and call 1-800-294-0222. Together, we can bring these kids home safely. This advertisement was paid for in partnership with Cars R Us and Find the Children.
You're listening to Columbus Perspective on The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. Columbus is a soccer town. We've known that ever since the crew joined the MLS in 1996 and built the first soccer-specific stadium in the U.S. in 99. A quarter of a century later, Columbus will show the world what it has to offer with the Summer of Soccer right here in our backyard. Here to tell us more about all the exciting football events happening is Jesse Giorzi with the Greater Columbus Sports Commission. Welcome, Jesse.
Hey, good to be here.
Wonderful to have you. I understand the Summer of Soccer in Columbus is actually starting in the next few days on Tuesday with the She Believes Cup. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, taking some liberties with our definition of summer here, but we're going to kick it off on April 9th. So the third place match and the championship match will be held as a doubleheader. The teams play this weekend to determine that who's playing in which of those final matches in Atlanta. But at Lower.com Field next Tuesday, the matches will feature Japan, Canada, Brazil, and the U.S. Women's National Team. All four teams are ranked in the top 15 in the world and also competed in last year's tournament where the U.S. Women's National Team took first place. This is the women's team's, I think, 12th appearance in Columbus, and they're 9 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw across a variety of competitions from Women's World Cup to friendlies and competitions like the She Believes Cup. So it's going to be a great night, back-to-back, two huge women's soccer matches in Columbus in April to kick things off.
Yeah, you mentioned 12 times the women's national team has been in Columbus. It's their second time playing on the pitch at Lower.com. The U.S. men's team has been here 14 times. What is it about Columbus that attracts the largest soccer organizations?
Yeah, I think I forget which person said it, but it was a former U.S. men's national team player. It's called Columbus, the spiritual home of U.S. soccer. And so I think there's been a ton of success here. The fans have obviously gravitated towards these matches. Columbus was the first city in quite a few World Cup qualifying cycles on the men's side to host two World Cup qualifiers last time around before the 2022 World Cup. And so those games sell out fast. Crowds, American fans show up in huge numbers with loud voices and just happens over and over again. The U.S.-Mexico rivalry is, one of the core storylines there is Dos Acero, which has happened, that scoreline 2-0 U.S. win several times in Columbus. And so I think, Columbus loves its sports, but especially has shown a proclivity to loving soccer, with the crew being one of the founding teams in the MLS and the crew's success obviously has helped that out and continuously adding more and more soccer fans. And so I think just, when you're the U.S. national team on the men's or women's side, you're looking for a place that's going to have not only a full crowd, but, a full voice as well. And we've got that in Columbus because of the passionate fans here and a great soccer culture in the past. It's only going to continue to grow and hopefully give us upper hand when we look to host more of these major soccer events.
Jesse Giorzi is with the Columbus Sports Commission. 2024 is being dubbed the Summer of Soccer in Columbus, and I don't mind if you apply the term summer liberally. I don't think anyone would at this point, Jesse. We can start summer this Tuesday with the She Believes Cup, and then looking ahead in the schedule, there is an incredible slate of games and events in the span of 11 days. Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, that's really when it peaks. Starting on July 24th, really even the weekend before that with some other events supporting the MLS All-Star Game. But the main event is July 24th. The MLS All-Star Game will be in Columbus for the third time, first time since, I think, 2005. So first time at Lower.com Field. It's an awesome time to be there. It's going to be, you know, have some of the best players in the country, the best players in the world, you know, that play in the U.S. will be there. And that'll be an absolute festival. That event's sold out, more than a dozen years in a row. There are, again, some, more supporting events, skills challenge the night before, which is a newer kind of fun way to show off some of the soccer players' skills, and some other events that'll be going on around that weekend. But that's, as you said, the first of three. Just 3 days later at Lower.com Field, the Columbus Crew will play Aston Villa on July 27th. Aston Villa is a team in the English Premier League that's competing for a top four spot, which would give them Champions League play. So a very strong English Premier League team that's stopping in Columbus as part of their off-season tour of the U.S. And then the final one, which will have the largest crowd of the three because it's at Ohio Stadium, will be the Premier League powerhouses Man City and Chelsea. Man City currently in a title fight with Liverpool and Arsenal in the Premier League, and they won the Champions League and the Premier League last year. So it's kind of a fun look back. The Crew played their first game ever in 1996 at Ohio Stadium, and here 28 years later, you know, Manchester City and Chelsea are probably two of the 8 or 10 biggest clubs in the whole world. Back in 2016, when PSG, Paris Saint-Germain, and Real Madrid came to Columbus, it was 85,000 plus fans. So fingers crossed we can have even a larger crowd then. At the time, that was the biggest soccer crowd in the history of Ohio. So hopefully we can top that. Again, both of those teams choosing Columbus on their preseason tours. And so it's something that I think, you know, the biggest reason is the stuff I talked about before. The fans show up for it. If it's Crew, if it's MLS All-Stars, if it's women's national team, men's national team, if it's international teams, Columbus fans and Ohio fans love soccer and they really show up for it. So, you know, all told, I think between those three events, it's going to be close to, if not over, $40 million estimated direct visitor spending for the city. So a huge influx of dollars. And that's really what it, you know, comes down to for us, the sports commission. That's one of the key things for us, is wanting to, you know, help with human and economic development in Columbus, and bring those dollars here, and those dollars stay in the community, you know, directly. They're spent at restaurants, hotels, bars, stores, retail places, experiences in Columbus, but then those dollars stay here and continue to roll over and boost not only economic dollars in Columbus, but just gives, you know, some excitement and another awesome list of things to do this summer in Columbus.
Absolutely. And July 24th is a big date, because I remember however many months ago it was that it was announced that the MLS All-Star Game was coming here this coming summer. The city saved the Crew from leaving just a few years ago. And of course, now beautiful, brand new Lower.com Field, this amazing facility where they play and where they won a championship just a few months ago. Jesse, what can you say about what the moment of having the MLS All-Star Game here means to Columbus?
Yeah, I mean, and especially after earning the right, but with on the field play from the Crew, as you mentioned, hosting the MLS Cup at Lower.com Field in 23, and also hosting in 2020, an historic Crew Stadium, and then the community, you know, and the Crew and the ownership group there, and everybody around it supporting this bid to bring the MLS Cup, or excuse me, the MLS All-Star Game here, it's just really special. I mean, you know, not that long ago, it's under 10 years ago, that it looked like, you know, there might not be professional American soccer's highest level in Columbus, period. And then, you know, obviously a lot more complex and incredible of a story than that. But, you know, generally fans are like, no, we don't think so. We like our soccer. We're going to keep the Crew. And now you've got, since then, a new stadium, two MLS Cups, and now hosting the MLS All-Star Game. So what a reversal of fortune. You know, it looked like, oh, we might not have the MLS. Guess what? Actually, we're having the two biggest MLS events in the year back to back. You know, the MLS Cup in December, where Crew lifted that championship trophy, and then here. So it's just a really like a cherry on top of years later on the Save the Crew moment, but just a special opportunity. And people of Columbus fans and visiting fans have raved about lower.com field since it popped up. This is another feather in the cap of that facility hosting the All-Star Game.
So much exciting stuff happening, not just for soccer fans, but for the city of Columbus in general. And I dare say that if after this summer you have not become a soccer fan, then you weren't paying attention. Jesse Giorzi from the Columbus Sports Commission, thank you so much for stopping by Columbus Perspective to give us all of this exciting news. We're looking forward to it.
Yeah, thank you. And head to columbussports.org for more information. There's a Summer of Soccer page there that you can find that'll link you to all the tickets and information going on. But yeah, it's going to be an awesome, awesome summer of the world's game in our town.
At first glance, Terrence and Shania have nothing in common. Terrence is a musician. He is constantly traveling. He's 32 years old, single with no kids, and started smoking when he was 16. Shania, on the other hand, just turned 45. She owns a coffee shop. She is married with two kids and has never smoked. What makes Terrence and Shania similar is that they both have been diagnosed with small cell lung cancer, and it was caught early. That's right, small cell lung cancer can affect anyone. The good news is early lung cancer screenings can detect small cell lung cancer before it spreads, when the disease is most treatable. Join Stand Up to Cancer and Jazz Pharmaceuticals to raise awareness of small cell lung cancer and accelerate the pace of research. Ask your healthcare provider about screening options that might be right for you or a loved one. Visit standuptocancer.org/lung to learn more.
One in four Americans have a disability. I'm one of them. I'm also a working mom who cares deeply about making sure every child with a disability thrives by getting their access needs met. We've got a trusted ally by our side. Easter Seals provides children and families the foundation for lifelong success through early learning programs, skills training, and prep for college and career. That's my Easter Seals. Make it yours. Join us at EasterSeals.com.
This is Columbus Perspective on the Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Clay Gordon in for Doug Petcash from the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
Ohio's ban on gender-affirming care for the state's transgender youth is coming under fire by the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU filed a lawsuit in Franklin County to strike down the law before it takes effect. The lawsuit states personal or private medical decisions should remain between families, not politicians. The lawsuit claims House Bill 68, also known as the Ohio Saving Adolescents from Experimentation Act, violates the state's constitution. 10 TV's Kevin Lander has heard from one parent of a transgender child who says he fears the law will have unintended consequences, which is why he wants it stopped.
My oldest is gender queer, non-binary.
Nick Bates of Columbus is talking about his 13-year-old child, Sam, who he says came out as transgender in middle school.
Parenting is hard enough without the government taking away my freedom as a parent to make the best decisions for my child.
He's talking about House Bill 68, also known as the SAFE Act, which bans gender-affirming care for transgender youth. A term Bates says is misunderstood.
The vast majority of gender-affirming care focuses on social transitions, clothing, use of proper pronouns, and recognizing the child for who they are.
Leading the charge to make the bill a law was State Representative Gary Click. The Republican from the Tiffin area disagreed with the American Medical Association, which supports gender-affirming care.
The AAP does not represent all. They may be an association and they may have thousands of members, but they do not represent the view of all of those pediatricians. I've talked to pediatricians who totally oppose this. I've talked to several doctors who totally oppose this.
As a parent of a transgender child, Bates says the bill could create a bigger problem.
Are you worried at all as a parent that this could perhaps increase the possibility of attempted suicide or suicide among those transgender youth in our state?
Yes.
Governor Mike DeWine vetoed House Bill 68, but Senate Republicans voted to override that veto. The bill will become law on April 24th. Nick Bates believes the lawsuit will prevail.
First, they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. So my faith draws me back to the idea that we will eventually win this fight.
Kevin Landers reporting. Now let's take a look at how House Bill 68 got here. Lawmakers passed the bill in December. Then Governor Mike DeWine vetoed it on December 29th. House lawmakers voted to override that veto on January 10th, with the Senate voting to do the same on January 24th. House Bill 68 is set to take effect on April 23rd. Ohio is the 23rd state to ban gender-affirming health care. Ohio State Board of Education is in a budget crisis. The Board of Education and Workforce discussed concerns in its March meeting that it could be in a deficit of $4 to $5 million over the next few years. The board proposed the idea of raising its five-year teacher licensing fees, cutting staff, and requesting money from the state. The president of the Ohio Education Association says the budget issues were created when the state legislature overhauled the education department. He is calling on the governor and the legislature to fill the gaps in funding without having to cut staff or raise the cost of teacher licenses.
If the state board doesn't have adequate funding, its only revenue stream is teacher license fees. And so that means that the people who work every day to provide support for students in our schools end up footing the bill for a decision that was made by politicians in Columbus. It's a tax on teachers. It's unfair. And we believe it's wholly unnecessary.
A spokesperson for the governor says it is premature for the Ohio Board of Education to be proposing things like raising the teaching licenses because it is still going through a transitional phase. The board says it has already reduced its expenses by cutting back on travel and keeping some open positions. A new online dashboard from Columbus City Schools providing insight into which buildings are too crowded and which are underused. This comes as the superintendent says CCS is looking to reduce costs by closing and consolidating schools. Just last month, the district launched a task force to develop a plan to do just that. And now with new data, the task force co-chair says it could help them learn what's best for the students.
We want to do what's best for the kids, you know, because some of us hang on to our old high schools, our old middle schools, that's where you grew up, that's where your parents went to. But some of these buildings are old. And we have to come to reality that we got to do what's best for the kids right now. And so we're losing kids to charter schools, and we want to bring those, we want those kids to come back to our schools.
The group will make its recommendation to the school board in June. There will be an opportunity for public comment before the board votes. Any changes will be implemented in fall of 2025. Federal help could be on the way more than 2 weeks after deadly tornadoes swept through the Buckeye State. Eight tornadoes touched down the night of March 14th. In all, 11 different counties saw some sort of damage, some of the worst being in Logan County around Indian Lake. Now, teams from FEMA were in central Ohio getting a firsthand look at the damage. This crew was in Berkshire Campgrounds in rural Delaware County after the state requested the response.
We come in, Small Business Administration, assess the damage, and then from there we go on, and if there's information that the state wants to handle the disaster on their own, they do that. If they think they need federal assistance, they can request assistance from the government.
We are expecting FEMA's report soon. It's still too early to know how costly the storm system was. Well, after the tornadoes, a Hilliard woman has made it her mission to make sure one photograph gets back to where it belongs. 10TV's Colin Dorsey has her story on how she's trying to spread a little kindness at a time when people rebuilding from the storms need it most.
I found it right here. It was laying right there, like that.
An unframed 8x10 of an unknown little boy from an undetermined location. This photograph showing up in Jennifer Saunders' Hilliard front yard.
It got torn a little bit when it through the storm. I found it like this.
The lingering question, where did it come from? It showed up the morning after tornadoes in strong storms ripped through Ohio and Indiana March 14th. Those storms just 2 weeks after the tornado that hit Hilliard, not too far from her own home. Maybe it came from just a few blocks away, or maybe it came from miles away. Jennifer went right to work trying to take the maybe out of it.
My son Brandon asked me, "What are you going to do with the picture?" So I told him I'm going to try to find the owner of it.
First, checking with neighbors.
Asked several of the houses, like, do you know who this is in this photo? And they said no, they didn't know. So I didn't have any luck.
So then she took to social media, posting the photo to various Facebook pages and on Nextdoor, trying to reunite the unknown boy with his proper home. The problem, there's not much to go off of. The back is blank. The front has a date of 2011 and the watermark of Olin Mills Photography Studio, a chain that went away shortly after this photo was taken. But as a mom herself of two boys, she can't imagine losing a photo of either.
A family's pass on photographs from generation to generation, and that's how they connect and know each other's histories.
It's also about bringing a bit of kindness to an unknown someone who may need it right now.
People have lost so much in these tornadoes. And if I could just give one thing back, or something that means so much, it would be so valuable, like this photograph, that would mean so much.
So maybe, just maybe, Jennifer will be able to take away the unknown of who this boy is. In Hilliard, Colin Dorsey, 10 TV News.
And the boy in that photograph would be nearly an adult by now. If you recognize the boy in the picture, reach out to 10 TV. The U.S. Supreme Court seems likely to preserve access to a medication that was used in nearly two-thirds of all abortions in the country last year. After more than an hour of argument on Tuesday, it appears the people who challenged the FDA's approval of the medication mifepristone and subsequent actions to ease access to it lack the legal right or standing to sue. This comes after both conservative and liberal judges are raising skeptical questions on the issue of standing. This is the court's first abortion case since Roe v. Wade. It was overturned 2 years ago. A House committee investigating anti-Semitism on college campuses is now targeting Rutgers University. The school is not commenting yet on this matter. After months of controversy and public demonstrations, there is mixed reaction after Columbus City Council approved a resolution calling for peace in Gaza. Both Palestinian protesters, you could hear chanting ceasefire now, and people from Jewish Columbus spoke against the wording of the resolution. Palestinians wanted the word ceasefire used, while Jewish Columbus says it supports peace, but wanted city council to call out Hamas directly for their actions leading to the conflict in Gaza. Columbus is not alone. Cleveland City Council passed a similar resolution in their meeting as well. Sponsored by all members, their resolution calling for a ceasefire in the Israel-Hamas war. More legal trouble for former Ohio House Speaker Larry Householder. He now faces an indictment from the Ohio Attorney General's office, accused of misusing campaign funds to pay for his criminal defense in his federal trial. Householder was convicted in that trial just over 1 year ago. He's currently serving 20 years in prison for his conviction, but is appealing it. Householder could run for office again if that appeal is successful. That's the reason why Attorney General Dave Yost says the new state case against Householder is so important.
The public interest demands the punishment of the conduct and the deterrence of others who might be tempted to the same sort of wrongdoing. Yes, we're sending a message.
Householder is set to be arraigned in Cuyahoga County on April 12th.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Ohio is expecting an influx of visitors for the solar eclipse. We're going to talk all about it right now. Matt McLaren with the Ohio Chamber of Commerce joins us. Thank you so much for being here today.
Hey, thanks for having me on the show.
So how is the chamber, in charge mostly of businesses? How are they preparing for the solar eclipse?
Well, the solar eclipse is going to be big business. It's a once-in-a-lifetime event happening here in Ohio. All of Ohio is going to experience an eclipse, and a large path in the state of Ohio is going to experience a total solar eclipse. It's going to bring hundreds of thousands of people to our state.
So how do you plan for something like this? Have you guys looked to other states, for past years that have gone through this? Where do you even begin?
We have. So Ohio is doing a great job. What Ohio does really well, our communities, our attractions, they step up. And that's what's happening this time around. You're seeing a lot of the communities being prepared for the large amount of guests coming in by doing big viewing parties. We're also seeing the attractions doing things like Cedar Point. It's opening up the earliest it's ever opened for its total eclipse at the point. And then other major attractions like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, adding a four-day solar fest so they want people to come early and stay late and enjoy Cleveland for that entire weekend.
So what do you think people are going to be spending their money on? Are we talking hotel, gas, or are we talking about some of these events as well?
We are. We're seeing them spend on all of it. In fact, many hotels and campgrounds in the path of totality are already full. Airbnbs are filling up. People are going to be traveling in here from other states. And then as far as an economic impact, we're going to see it in the hundreds of millions of dollars because of this great event. It's really kicking off the tourism season for Ohio just a little early this year.
The chamber has thousands of clients, of members. What are they saying about this? We're talking maybe, you think of the hotels, but what are some of the businesses doing to prepare for the influx?
Yeah, they're excited about it. I mean, you're going to see watch parties in all the major cities and all the major communities that are in that path of totality. Those include areas in Dayton and in Akron and Cleveland, Toledo, Sandusky, northern parts of Columbus. All are going to be, and when we say path of totality, that area where the moon will completely cover the sun, so you get this darkness right in the middle of the afternoon, right around that 3:10 time period. So with these watch parties, you have areas like the Sculpture Park in Butler County and the Grand Resort in Warren, Ohio, in Trumbull County, that are going to invite people in, make sure that they have your solar glasses to watch, and really enjoy a community event together watching this solar eclipse.
You mentioned the economic impact, obviously, to the hundreds of millions throughout the whole state, but it's going to be a big boost for some of these rural communities, too, that are maybe outside of the city limits that, maybe wouldn't have thousands and thousands of people. Like, these cities will swell up.
They will. And what we're seeing and what we're hearing from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, state parks are going to be a popular place to go. Many of the state park lodges and cabin and campgrounds are already filling up for that time.
Are there specific sectors or industries that would maybe benefit from this than others?
It's the tourism industry. So tourism in the state of Ohio is a $46 billion a year industry. The biggest time for us is usually in the summer, but with this starting April 8th, it gives people a reason, even more of a reason, to be here and enjoying Ohio. So you're seeing that early kickoff to a big tourism season. But what I also like, and what you'll also find, those that visit Ohio, their perception of our state more than doubles. It's a great place to live, a great place to start a family, a great place for starting a business. So by inviting these visitors in and giving them this great experience, we're improving the perception of Ohio, which will help us with population and more visitors on down the line.
So correct me if I'm wrong, from the tourism aspect of the Ohio Chamber, this is almost a recruiting event.
In some ways, yeah, it really is, because our state's a great product, and we get people here to see it, it makes them want to come back.
And tell me, too, about the logistics of, totality. It's only a couple minutes, but it takes months of planning for this. But you're saying, come early, stay late. Can you explain that?
Yeah. So because there's going to be so many people in the state of Ohio during this event, we're expecting a lot of traffic. And the best way to avoid that traffic is if you come early, right? So you're not just going to be there for the eclipse, which will start happening around 2 in the afternoon, and that total eclipse happens around 3:10 in most areas. So come earlier, enjoy the communities that you're in, and then stay late, stay past the actual eclipse so that you're not in that big traffic as everyone tries to head home, so that you're enjoying the location that you're in, the attraction that you're in, the restaurants and the cities that you're in.
Matt, you've been in the tourism industry for a very long time. Tell me what you're specifically looking for with an event like this. What are you hoping to learn from an event like this?
Well, I'll tell you what we first want. We want a very sunny day.
Right.
So if we have a sunny day across the state of Ohio, it's a best case scenario. People will be spread out all across the state, and then they'll have a great experience. Even if we get a little bit of clouds here and there, I still know that the great amusement parks and attractions and museums that are offering, being open that day, are going to provide a great experience. And that's what, you know, people we want them to have and learn and take away as a great experience.
It sounds like all positives right now for the state. Is that right?
It is. It is. This is an opportunity for Ohio to really show itself to hundreds of thousands of new visitors in April. And I know we're going to do a great job.
So I'm going to be watching from my patio. Matt, where are you going to be watching the eclipse from?
Yeah, I think you'll either find me at COSI here in Columbus or at the Columbus Zoo watching alongside the animals.
Excellent. Matt McLaren with the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. Really appreciate your input. And best of luck on the eclipse day.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, make sure when the eclipse is here, you are protecting your eyes. The Ohio Department of Health officials say even during the moment of totality, it's not safe to look at the sun without the proper eclipse glasses. 10TV's Kevin Landers explains the harmful and lasting effects that not having the proper eyewear could cause.
Thousands of Ohioans will have a front seat to the total solar eclipse. And if you're planning to watch, experts say not just any glasses will keep you safe.
Sunglasses don't help. You shouldn't ever stare at the sun, even with sunglasses. You should not use cameras to view the sun. Certainly should not use binoculars to view the sun. Sometimes they can even concentrate the rays.
If you don't wear the proper eclipse glasses, doctors say your eyes could be damaged in a matter of seconds.
Even just a few brief looks at the sun can cause permanent damage to our vision.
Even during the moment of totality, when the sun is completely blocked by the moon, experts say don't be tricked into taking off your glasses.
The moon blocking the sun can move ever so slightly, and even a quick change and a quick glimpse during that can cause immediate and permanent damage to your eyes.
As for rewearing old 2017 eclipse glasses, Dr. Waleen says those aren't guaranteed to be safe. He urges you to get new glasses because your vision is too important to leave to chance.
We don't know for sure if there are problems with some of these glasses. And I can guarantee you, if you burn the retina or the seeing part of the eye, your eyes don't feel it. And it's too late by the time you actually know.
Kevin Landers, 10TV News.
Three of the six members of the Living Presidents Club are joining forces. President Biden's two immediate Democratic predecessors, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama, are joining Biden for a reelection fundraiser. Obama has become increasingly involved in Biden's reelection campaign in recent weeks and potentially in coming weeks. Independent presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has named his running mate during a campaign rally. Kennedy announced Silicon Valley attorney and entrepreneur Nicole Shanahan as his vice presidential pick. The 38-year-old first-time candidate has previously said she supports Kennedy in part because of his environmental advocacy and for his stance on vaccines and children's health. Chris Christie says an option for him to run on a third-party candidacy is out of the question. In a statement, the former New Jersey governor said while he appreciates the encouragement, it's not an avenue he wants to pursue. Christie added that he cannot have his candidacy help Donald Trump retake the White House. The Republican National Committee is hiring, but they appear to have an unusual test for new staffers. Sources say during job interviews, the RNC is asking candidates if they believe the 2020 presidential election was stolen. This comes after the Trump campaign merged its operations with the RNC. A spokesperson for the RNC says the committee wants employees with meaningful views on how elections are won and lost. For the first time in nearly 30 years, part of Donald Trump's business empire has gone public. People can now buy stock in Trump Media and Technology Group, which owns the social media platform called Truth Social. Stock surged about 50% on opening at the NASDAQ. Wall Street assigned Trump Media a valuation of about $14 billion. However, experts warn that the price tag is not in line with reality. Former senator and vice presidential candidate Joe Lieberman has been laid to rest. In a statement from his family, Lieberman suffered complications from a fall. He was elected in the U.S. Senate in 1988 and in 2000. He was chosen by Al Gore to be his running mate for the White House. Lieberman switched from being a Democrat to an independent in 2006 and remained one until he left Senate in 2013. In a statement, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine says, quote, Fran and I were saddened to learn of the death of former U.S. Senator Joe Lieberman of Connecticut. Joe was a Senate colleague who put country over party.
He cared deeply about our country and the people he served. He was a man of great integrity. I was proud to work together with Joe on a number of issues, including legislation to combat underage drinking on college campuses. He was a good man who lived his faith, end quote. Joe Lieberman was 82 years old.
Again, that's Clay Gordon, in for Doug Petcash and courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV. From the Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS AM, 1460 ESPN Columbus, and Sunday morning at 7 on WBNS FM, Sports Radio 97.1 The Fan.